When I was in high school, my homeroom teacher thought it would be a good idea to become pen pals with the elementary school students right next door. I did not. In my teenage arrogance and impatience, I saw it as another frivolous writing task that just amounted to more homework. We made a few exchanges, but after that, our teacher succumbed to our incessant grumblings and ended the experiment. Now, I feel chagrined. I feel like I missed out on a unique opportunity to connect in a meaningful way with curious young minds. Because I really do enjoy sending and receiving handwritten letters. There's something very intimate and grounding about this slow, physical communication, especially in our fast-paced digital age. So I try to write thank you notes, jot down my thoughts in a diary, or send letters to loved ones. Although, I must admit, even now, I have a tendency to procrastinate. We'll hear about a group of dedicated pen pals who met each other through the mail in a time where meeting new people was not easy. That's this week on the Up North Lowdown from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Max Copeland. We'll hear more about pen pals later in the episode. We'll also learn about new research into ballast water on the Great Lakes that matters in a big way. Our environment reporter Ellie Katz will explain in just a moment. But let's begin with an update on the ongoing fight over whether Enbridge Energy can build a tunnel beneath the Straits of Mackinac. The company wants to relocate part of its Line 5 crude oil and natural gas liquid pipeline from the floor of the lake bed into a tunnel beneath the straits. It's awaiting a federal permit, but the state gave the project its green light in December. And that permit from the state of Michigan is now the target of an appeal from a statewide group that fights climate change. Here's our climate reporter, Izzy Ross.
The Michigan Climate Action Network plans to file its appeal on May 9th. They're targeting a permit granted by the state that would allow Enbridge to relocate the Line 5 pipeline in a proposed tunnel underneath the straits. Denise Keel is the network's executive director. She didn't say what was in the appeal, but she says they've pushed for climate to be considered throughout this process.
We decided to have our own day in court and to challenge Enbridge, challenge the Michigan Public Service Commission, and frankly, challenge the law itself to recognize what we already know, that we are living in this climate crisis.
Keel spoke on a panel organized by groups opposed to Line 5 on Wednesday in Traverse City. Last December, the Michigan Public Service Commission approved Enbridge's plan. It was the first time a state agency considered greenhouse gas emissions in an analysis under Michigan's Environmental Policy Act. Experts testified that the project could emit millions of tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere each year. But the commission said the proposed alternatives to the tunnel project would be even more harmful. Enbridge spokesperson Ryan Duffy reiterated that in an emailed statement to IPR, saying the pipeline is better for the environment than moving fuel by train, truck, and ship. Tribes and environmental groups have already appealed the state permit, and the project still needs a federal permit from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
That update from IPR's Izzy Ross. Her reporting comes to us through a partnership with Grist. For transparency, we note Enbridge is among Interlochen Public Radio's financial supporters. However, they have no role in decisions about our news coverage, which are made independently by the IPR newsroom. Some of us have learned a new term this week, Lakers. No, not the basketball team. Around here, the term refers to ships that travel only within the Great Lakes. Scientists have been trying to figure out the best way to treat ballast water in Lakers, and it's trickier than they thought it would be. IPR environment reporter Ellie Katz spoke with Morning Edition host Tyler Thompson about what's at stake and why scientists are trying to do this in the first place.
So first off, what do we mean by ballast water?
So ballast water is basically the water that these huge cargo ships suck up before they set sail in order to steady the boat as they cross open water. And then, typically when they reach port, they discharge that water and everything that's in it into the new port.
Okay, and I know ballast water is the source of most invasive species in the Great Lakes. But that's from vessels that come here from the ocean. So why do scientists care about it in the ships that stay within the Great Lakes?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That ballast water from ocean-going ships is now regulated. But the same can't be said for ballast water of ships that stay in the Great Lakes their whole lives, these Lakers. And they might be secondary spreaders, you know, they might be moving invasives from one lake to another. So for a while, environmental groups have been pushing for regulation, and scientists are trying to figure out if there might be a good way to treat the water.
So since we're talking about this right now, I'm guessing they've probably hit a few snags.
That is correct. So this research is part of this years-long project on ballast water from the University of Wisconsin-Superior. The background is scientists know for a fact that these teeny tiny adult animals like zooplankton are hitching a ride in ballast water. That's been well documented. But
nobody's really addressed the reproductive stages. They all produce eggs of some sort or some sort of resting stage. And then that as well could be taken up into the water and moved around.
That's Matt Teneich. He's director of the Lake Superior Research Institute, which is the group conducting this research. And it was published earlier this year in the Journal of Great Lakes Research. And up until now, like you said, we didn't really know if eggs and other life stages of these organisms were also hitching a ride in the ballast water of Lakers.
So what did they end up doing?
So they sampled ballast water from Lakers on Lake Erie, Huron, and Michigan, and they found thousands of eggs and organisms in these more dormant, inactive phases of life. You know, they're mostly native species or well-established invasives like, you know, quagga mussels or zebra mussels. But they're good to study because lesser-known invasives, which is what the scientists are really interested in, would behave the same way.
So the point behind that paper was to say, yeah, they're being moved. Now what?
Now they need to do more research to see if those eggs and those early life stages even pose a threat.
We think it'll cause some risk to the receiving environment, but we just at this point don't know what that risk is.
So they know these little guys are getting moved around in ballast water. Now they basically have to figure out how many of these eggs are actually surviving the trip, you know? And then when they arrive, how many are actually hatching and living in this new environment that they've been discharged into?
Well, they certainly have more questions to answer about this recent discovery, but what is the ultimate goal here?
The ultimate goal here is to figure out the best way to treat ballast water on these Lakers, on these ships that only sail within the Great Lakes, you know, to hopefully prevent the spread of invasive species. These researchers want to design and test and recommend technology that could treat ballast water, but if it only kills big, active adult organisms, that might not solve the problem. So this research could tell them, okay, we need to design technology that would kill eggs and dormant organisms too. Here's Matt Teneich again.
We hope to have a really good understanding of treatment technologies able to work in Great Lakes water, and then hopefully we'll know the impact to the ships. And then maybe from there, a final solution can be created.
And that solution could be some sort of filter or UV light or a bleaching system, but something, because right now there's really not much preventing the potential spread of these organisms within the Great Lakes.
Environment reporter Ellie Katz speaking with IPR's Tyler Thompson. When we come back, the power of the pen. Pal.
I think there's something really great about intentionally slowing down the process, and it makes your brain do something totally different than when you're firing off a text to a pal.
Stay with us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave Nafsker found out about it by accident. A few years back, he had a long layover in Iceland, so he did some Googling to see what he could do while he was there. That's when he found a project where people had figured out how to use and sell almost 100% of every fish they caught. He set up a meeting with the lead guy.
Walked into his office. He had a fish skin, fish leather lamp, and he had a table with all these different products that were being made from parts of the Icelandic cod that used to be put in landfill. It really was inspirational.
The products sold from a single cod had gone from generating $15 to over $5,000. Could a project like this help the struggling fishing industry in the Great Lakes? That's next time on Points North. That episode of Points North is available now. You can listen to it wherever you're hearing this podcast.
Welcome back to the Up North Lowdown. I'm Max Copeland. When was the last time you sent someone a handwritten letter out of the blue? During the pandemic, Heather Spooner, owner of the Ampersand Lettering Lab in Traverse City, started the Letter League. It began as a project to connect strangers during a time when people had to be separated, basically to help people find pen pals. Now hundreds of people participate. Spooner told IPR's Tyler Thompson that the whole idea started on her wife's birthday.
And I wanted to do something special for her, but very quickly realized we weren't going to be able to gather. And I thought, well, why don't I just have everybody send cards to her? And she was still working during the pandemic, so she was gone during the days, and I was having people send cards to our house, and I would go out and gather them. I quickly realized, as I was going to the mailbox, that that was my little glimmer of joy. And after a few days, I thought, huh, other people must feel this. How can I make people feel this joy that I'm feeling? Because so much of the feelings that we were feeling during the pandemic were the opposite. And I thought, I could reinvent pen pals and make them relevant for 2020. What would that look like?
You used the word relevant, which is interesting because, like, I think of the digital age now, and especially texting and things like that, it is a lot easier to be in touch with people today. Whereas I feel like you don't see people writing letters to each other anymore. What makes that sort of special? What is unique about that connection?
I think what makes it special is that it doesn't happen as often. There's something novel about writing a letter. There's something really intentional about sitting down and thinking through your thoughts to put them on paper. Whereas in texting or in some kind of digital communication, you're rattling off words and thoughts that maybe aren't even coherent, and you're wanting immediate gratification, and you're wanting an immediate response. Whereas in letter writing, you're thinking through what's worth writing down on this finite amount of space that I have on this paper, and is it worth sending to another person through the mail with a stamp that I'm going to pay for them to read? I think there's something really great about intentionally slowing down the process, and it makes your brain do something totally different than when you're firing off a text to a pal to get a response about something.
Yeah, in second grade, which was forever ago, I had a pen pal, and we had a pen pal project in the whole nine yards. The whole classroom participated in it, and I couldn't tell you who that person is today, what they're up to, you know, what their deal is, but I just have very fond memories of it, even if I can't recall the things I wrote or what have you. And I have terrible handwriting. So it's interesting how something that long ago I still have a very fond memory of, but I couldn't tell you what I texted yesterday.
I think there are a lot of people that have some memory of letter writing, whether it's a pen pal program that they had in grade school or communicating with grandparent, or even in an older generation, there are people still alive and participating in this pen pal program that had parents or possibly they themselves used letters to communicate during wars. And, you know, people talk about that a lot with me, that somewhere in somebody's closet, there's a box of letters that grandma and grandpa sent back and forth to each other. That ephemeral thought of letters being something that transcend time and kind of serve as a time capsule for this unique part of your life. I don't think that will ever go away. That's something that can be relevant for eternity.
What have you taken away from this project, putting it together, and what is something that really awestruck you about this?
It surprises me, and it shouldn't, because if you're paying attention to the world at large, it will come as no surprise that people are aching for connection. I'm surprised that a pen pal program still has legs when people have returned to work, resumed the pace of life pre-COVID, maybe even faster than we were doing in 2019. But it's still really surprising to me that people are searching out ways to connect with people when we are arguably at our most connected time that any of us have ever seen. We have every resource at our fingertips. We are inundated with ways to communicate and connect and plug in. And I thought post-COVID, this would be looked at as, oh, that's one more thing. I can't take that on. And instead, I hear people saying, I want that. I want something intentional that I can spend 10 minutes sitting down, lighting a candle, writing a note to my pal, and have that time for myself, because I think people are looking for those little spaces in their days, in their weeks, in their months, where they have that intentional slowdown. And if there is one good thing that has come out of the pandemic, it is that, I think, that people know the value of slowing down. They value slow, intentional living, maybe a little bit more because it was forced upon us, and we saw that there was good in that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
IPR's Tyler Thompson again there, speaking with Heather Spooner about her project, The Letter League. The group has about 600 participants and a waiting list. Learn more at our website, iprnews.org. Okay, let's find out what else is news in Michigan this week. The parents of the Oxford High School shooter have been assigned publicly funded attorneys to handle the appeal of their involuntary manslaughter convictions, a process that will likely take months. The U.S. Department of Justice announced a multi-million dollar settlement to more than 130 victims of Larry Nassar's sexual abuse. Attorneys say victims reported the crimes to the FBI, but the agency failed to properly investigate, allowing Nassar to continue abusing patients. This week marked 10 years since the start of the Flint water crisis. Dozens of people marched through the city demanding justice for those who suffered from Flint's lead-tainted drinking water. Despite a decade of investment in the water system, officials admit tests continue to show some lead in the city's drinking water, although it is within the state and federal standards. Many residents, however, say they will never again trust their tap water. Students at the University of Michigan and Michigan State University joined students in other universities protesting Israel's war in Gaza. The campus protests across the U.S. are calling for a ceasefire and for the universities to divest from companies that profit from the war. The Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians could soon be the first tribal nation in Michigan to officially grant legal rights to nature. A resolution under consideration right now would give legal standing to water, plants, land, and animals. The resolution is meant to build on tribal teachings, tribal science, and treaty rights that would strengthen environmental protection arguments in court. The Bay Area Transportation Authority is going electric, at least incrementally. The transit agency serving Grand Traverse and Leelanau counties bought 6 electric vans. The 10-passenger vehicles will start hitting the roads in the coming months as part of Beta's Link service, which allows passengers to order rides door-to-door. Should sneakers and flip-flops be considered weapons? The Michigan Supreme Court heard arguments in that case this week. It is important because it could determine how people are charged with assault. In this case, a group of bullying students kicked and punched another student who suffered a concussion. One teenager in the case was charged as an adult. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced it will keep lake sturgeon off the endangered species list after it found rehabilitation efforts such as stocking and habitat restoration have contributed to the species' success. New mountain biking trails are open just southwest of Sheboygan. The professionally designed trails are on a parcel of land near Tapinabee owned by the Little Traverse Land Conservancy. The trails opened for public use on April 26th. A formal dedication is planned in June. That's it for the lowdown this week. We had contributions from Ellie Katz, Tyler Thompson, Michael Livingston, and Izzy Ross. Music is by Blue Dot Sessions. Ed Ronco is our editor, and I'm Max Copeland. I also produce the show. We leave you this week with the music of the World Youth Symphony Orchestra, performing here at Interlaken Center for the Arts. They are performing under the baton of conductor Christian Machalaru. He graduated from Interlaken Arts Academy in 1998. And this week, it was announced he will become the music director for the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, a coveted job in classical music. So while you can't actually hear him playing an instrument, we leave you with a little bit of music that he shaped and led right here in northern Michigan. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
I'm Keith Brown. This week on Gameplay, we'll hear music from Christopher Larkin's haunting, melancholy original score for the 2017 game Hollow Knight. We'll listen to pieces from the original soundtrack alongside arrangements for solo piano, jazz combo, and more. It's the music of Hollow Knight, this week on Gameplay.
you can stream full episodes of gameplay on demand and view playlists at gameplayshow.org.